probably familiarity as far as lineups are concerned, and it's something that I got to take a deep look at and see if, you know, it's not worth a discussion on a number of things. But that group has not played well. I think before the Indiana game, it was not rated as a really good group, but I don't think they've had a ton of time to gel and to know what to expect or to know how to play off of each other.
That group that Monty Williams is referring to, the one that he wants to take a deep look at and have maybe a discussion about, are his starters, who last night were, once again, just awful last night in the loss to the Washington Wizards. The Suns played a very disengaged, disinterested, bad basketball game against a bad basketball team that, if all were right in the world, the Suns win that game by 20. The Wizards are just not very good, and yet the Suns got completely obliterated in that game, which prompted Gambo all these questions about the starting lineup in particular, which just statistically, if you look at some of the numbers, the starters, those five guys, haven't been very good when they're on the floor. And I want to play one more, then I want to get your reaction to all of this. Because here's Monty talking about this adjustment to the lineup that he might have to make.
So it's something that I got to, you know, maybe make an adjustment. And, you know, ultimately I got to do what's best for the team. And it may, you know, me and I have to look at it enough and discuss it enough where we have to make some type of change. But it doesn't matter what change you make. If you're not sharing the ball and playing hard consistently, which has been our formula, I mean, you can put a lot of groups out there. It's just not going
to
work.
Your reaction to all this?
Yeah, I think that that's, I think that it's understandable to look at it and maybe change something for a game or two. I think in the end, that's your best starting lineup. And I think it's best to have Saric and Cam Johnson come off the bench. You know, the moves you can make is you can take Jay Crowder out of the starting lineup, put in Cam Johnson. You could take DeAndre Ayton out and put in Dario Saric. I tend to think that that would be a huge mistake. You know, the DeAndre thing. And I really don't favor, you know, Jay being taken out for Cam. I like Cam off the bench, and Jay gives you defense. And I think a lot of it to me is on Booker and Paul. I mean, that's your guys. I mean, if you look at the two of them, 53.5% of all of their productivity and shots when they're on the court come from those two guys. 53.5%. Booker's at 31.5%. Paul's at 22%. Bridges is at 18%. Crowder's at 16%. DeAndre's at 19%. So, you know, your guys, the majority of it is coming from those two. I think those two guys have to play better. I think Chris Paul could play better, and I think Devin Booker can play better. So I think a lot of the struggles is because these guys are taking the majority of the shots, they're dominating the ball, and they're not playing that well right now. They're not playing at the level that we expect them to play at.
Yeah, you know, listening to Monty again, and this is the second or third time that we've talked about this, a thought just kind of occurred to me listening to his words. Monty's a very smart guy. If he suggests on a post-game Zoom call that he might make a change to the starting lineup, he knows that immediately people like you and I and Suns fans and people who cover the team are going to take that and run with it, right? They're going to take that and immediately start speculating on what he's talking about. Is he talking about Jay? Is he talking about DeAndre Ayton? Who else could he possibly be talking about, right? There's value in that conversation for Monty Williams and how it affects his team, isn't there? There's value, at least I think there is. There's value in having people speculate openly about what the Suns should do with their starting lineup, because that might serve as a motivation. Just him even dropping a hint of a suggestion that he might look at it might prompt DeAndre Ayton to play a little bit harder and a little more aggressively when he's on the offensive end. Might prompt Devin Booker to play a little bit better in the first half. Not that he's going to get benched, but it might serve to motivate a team and give a team a little bit of an edge that, quite frankly, they've been missing the last few games from their starters. And whether he intends to actually do it or not, almost doesn't, not that it doesn't matter, it matters, but just by saying he might do it, I think could create a little bit of urgency for that unit to let them know, hey, boys, pick it up a little bit, because if you don't, I'm going to have to do something. So can you play a little bit better, please?
Listen, I didn't get to hear what Bickley and Marotta were talking about today. I've just had a lot of people tweeting, you know, but what Bickley said. I don't know what Dan said. I value those guys' opinions, and a lot of it, you know, if you're criticizing DeAndre Ayton for his lack of aggression, for his lack of shot blocking, for his, you know, not being able to take the ball to the basket and dunk it, and just, I get that stuff. I'm not going to debate that stuff, but he's a 22-year-old kid who is one of the elite defensive rebounders in the entire game of basketball at 22. He is a better defensive rebounder. He's getting 31.4% of all defensive rebounds. That's higher than Jokic. It's higher than Embiid. It's higher than Anthony Davis. It's higher than Sabonis. I mean, you know, like Rudy Gobert's a 31.9, and he's just a little bit ahead of him. So, I did a lot of homework on Ayton today. I talked to a lot of people around the league about him and just trying to, you know, what is it? He is not a great offensive player, but he's also not getting the touches this year. And for a reason. Like, there is a reason. His efficiency.
There's a reason he's not getting the touches. He's taking everything from 15 feet. He's not going to the rim.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, listen,
I wouldn't want to give him touches either. I wouldn't want to give him the ball either if I were the Phoenix Suns, if all he's going to do is shoot a bunch of jump shots all day long.
Last year, his offensive usage was 25.6% last year. Possessions. So 25.6%. You know, that's shots and free throws. He was at 25.6%. This year he's down to 19%. Why? Well, they added Paul. They added Crowder. Mikhail's developed into a great player. He's not and they're not developing anymore. They're trying to win basketball games. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I don't even think you would deny that there has been clear regression from DeAndre Ayton offensively this year. He has gone.
Yeah.
Backwards offensively, the
numbers, and I'm not the biggest numbers guy, but he said his true shooting percentage is 59.1%, which is pretty good. His points per possession is 1.03, which is efficient. Now, again, if you care about those numbers, they tell one story. But the other story is what we see, and what we see is we see a guy that's lacking aggression, that doesn't take the ball to the basket with dominance, that doesn't throw it back, that tries to settle for too many jump shots, doesn't get the position he needs to get the ball in a spot where he could score easy. We see all of that, right? So the numbers tell one story, and then what our eyes tell us see another story. Why is he getting so many less shots per game and touches? Well, because these other guys are better, and they're trying to win basketball games now, not trying to develop DeAndre Ayton. In the past, it was very much about developing DeAndre. Now, it's not about developing DeAndre now. He's going to have to develop on his own. In development practice, they're trying to win basketball games. And Chris Paul and Devin Booker and Mikal Bridges and those guys are better at shooting the basketball offensively. They're better than DeAndre. So that's why DeAndre is not going to get as many looks and touches.
Look, there's a lot of what you said that I agree when it comes to the Sun starters. Booker needs to be better. Paul needs to be better. Crowder is really hit and miss. I mean, he has really great games, and he has moments where he just vanishes, it seems like, on the floor. And I would agree with you that replacing Saric for Ayton would really leave them vulnerable defensively and on the boards. I do think that would create a lot of problems. But right now, DeAndre Ayton's offensive regression and his lack of aggression has left so much to be desired. I am very frustrated by, and I think a lot of Suns fans are too, with the eye test element of what you're talking about. And Eddie Johnson calls the games for Fox Sports Arizona. He was on Bickley and Marotta today.
You got to stand up. You got to do your part. Whatever they're asking you to do, if that's run through a brick wall, if that's dive on the floor, you have to do those things because that's what's expected of you. And DeAndre is still growing in that aspect. And I would like to think that he will get there, but he has to step it up if this team is going to do what we expect them to do this year.
And I just think about all the words that DeAndre Ayton said in the offseason about what he was going to do this year. We have not seen that yet from him at all.
No, but what they're asking him to do is a lot different than what they asked him to do in previous years. On this team, because they're trying to win, what they're asking him to do is rebound the basketball, play great defense, block shots. Now, the block shots, he's got to get better at it. He's never been a shot blocker, but he's averaging one block shot per game. That's got to be better. It's got to be at 1.5 to 2. 2 would be great. 2 would be great. I'll take 2, but he's at 1 right now. But what they're asking him to do is be a great rebounder, defensive players, and you'll get some opportunities here and there to score. But they're not asking him to be – they're not asking him to get this offense going. They're asking Booker to get the offense going and Chris Paul to get the – they're now looking at DeAndre. Hey, we need DeAndre to get the offense going. No, they're not asking DeAndre this year to do those things. They're trying to win basketball games.
I want to pass this along before we send it to break.
Yeah.
Wizards-Jazz tomorrow has been postponed. Wizards-Jazz has been postponed because Washington, the team the Suns played last night, does not have the league-required 8 players available to proceed with the game. We will see if, in any way, that affects the Phoenix Suns. But the Wizards game, the team the Suns just played last night, their game tomorrow has been postponed. I just wanted to get that out there before we take this break. When we come back with a roster that could see a ton of turnover this offseason, the NFL draft will be vital for the Cardinals. What direction could they go with in their first couple of picks? We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. All right, we'll talk about this mock draft in a second from The Athletic and what they have the Cardinals doing at number 16. But before we do, a couple of pieces of news that I want to get Gambo's thoughts on. One that we just mentioned at the end of the last segment, if you were with us through the break. And that is that the Wizards, the team the Suns lost to last night, their next game against the Utah Jazz for tomorrow night has been postponed because the Wizards do not have the league-required 8 available players to proceed with this game. Does that make you a little more nervous about Suns-Atlanta tomorrow and whether they're going to be able to pull that off?
Yeah, I mean, it does. I'm going to try to see what I can. I'm going to try to see what I can find out now. I'm going to send some messages while we are talking. But Wizards-Jazz postponed, and remember, they have some players that are out, too. So it's not just Hachimura and Wagner are in the health and safety protocol. They've got other players that were out, and that, I think that really hurts them.
Yeah, with no Russell Westbrook, and they're just out of guys. And the concern, and look, we're living in a COVID world. We're sports talk show hosts in a COVID world. Some things are beyond our ability to understand. But I do have to wonder if a team that had, you know, if it's determined that the Suns came in close enough contact for long enough with some of the players who are out themselves, will they in fact not be able to play? And will the Suns have enough guys to be able to play Atlanta? So far, there's been no, I'm just purely speculating on this one. I don't know.
Yeah, they don't have the 8 available players, so... Okay, yeah. You look at it. So they don't have 8 available players. Here's the problem with that. Go look at the box score last night. Okay, they had a lot of players playing. I'm just going to give it to you in a second, so bear with me. But they're saying that they do not have 8 available players. But if you look at the Wizards last night, they played 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 guys. They played 12 guys. If you take out Hachimura and you take out Wagner, now you're down to 10. So they're saying they don't have 8 guys available. And it was still 3 guys that did not play coach's decision. So they played 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 guys played. And now they're saying they don't have 8 available. 2 of those guys are in the safety protocol with COVID. So that knocks it down to 10. Where are the other 2 guys that are unavailable? Today's an off day. It's not a back-to-back.
I just wonder if they did contact tracing from last night and determined that there were 3 more players that were too close to those players, and now they have to be out too.
Which, has to be.
You know, contact tracing could be what undoes this whole thing for the NBA, at least temporarily, because contact tracing just makes it really ruin. You're talking about such a small roster, makes it really difficult. And I agree, you would think it has to be the reason why. The second news comes from the NFL. And it comes from within the division. The Seattle Seahawks fired their offensive coordinator today, Brian Schottenheimer. He's been their OC since 2018. They made the announcement today. He's also been the OC of the Jets and the Rams. In a way, you could see this one coming because of the way that offense really struggled in the second half of the season and really struggled against the Rams. And now they are in the market for an offensive coordinator to pull out the best of Russell Wilson next year.
Yeah. Remember, they don't have a first-round draft pick this year because they traded it to get Jamal Adams from the Jets. So they do not have a first-round pick. They did say that they want to look from within to try to figure out, you know, what can happen, you know, to how to fix this. They wanted to look from within. And they wanted to, you know, they wanted to be more successful running the ball and more efficient. So it does make sense that they go out and they fire Schottenheimer and they'll bring in another offensive coordinator to try to get them back to what they like to do, which is be more successful running the football.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, back to our regularly scheduled program, if you will, and what we were planning on talking about here. I just wanted to get some thoughts on both of those because those are both kind of big stories right now in sports in the moment. The Athletic, now the college football season is over with Alabama's big win last night. The Athletic came out with a very ambitious two-round mock draft. And unlike last week's mock draft, in which, who was it, Todd McShay had the Cardinals going with Travis Etienne, the running back out of Clemson.
Yes.
Neither you or I were big fans of that concept. This concept I like a whole lot better, and that's the Arizona Cardinals taking a cornerback, J.C. Horn, out of South Carolina with the 16th pick overall. This one I can get behind.
Yeah, he's big, he's strong, he's physical. He had two picks against Auburn. He played in a great conference against great competition. Played six games this year and then decided to opt out. That's the pick that I would want. I mean, go get yourself, you know, a big time, you know, cornerback that could end up beating. Now, I don't want to put him in there at number one. It's a lot of times that fails, you know, when you go out and you get a guy and you throw him right away, and you know, you got to give him some experience. So if you brought him in this year as a number two and eventually he becomes a number one in a year or so, I think that's a great way to go.
Yeah, I think, look, we all know the old cliche about drafting for need and how you don't want to draft for need. I all things being equal, I think that's the rule that every NFL team should follow. I don't think all things are equal for the 2021 Arizona Cardinals. They need a young corner in the worst kind of way. They just, outside of Byron Murphy, who's a slot guy, they just don't have a young edge outside cornerback that they can build around for the future. That guy is not on the roster.
Yeah.
He doesn't exist. And even if they hit on somebody in free agency, which we just talked about a half hour ago, how hard it is to actually do that, they just don't have that guy anywhere on their roster. So while I agree that need is nothing that you ever want to have dictate what you do in the draft, man, the Cardinals do have a need at this position in this draft very badly, I think.
Yeah, you just, like, if he's gone, you can't reach for the next cornerback. Like, you gotta take the best available player. But you hope that the best available player in need lines up. Sometimes it does. And for them, maybe it will. But they need a cornerback desperately because Robert Alford, I don't think, comes back. And Drake Kirkpatrick, I don't think, comes back. And I don't know about Patrick Peterson. And now, you know, all of a sudden, you're two starting quarterbacks, not counting Byron Murphy, you know, next year could be guys that are going to come from outside the organization, maybe the draft or free agency.
Yeah, potentially. And along those lines, our friends over at Pro Football Focus decided the one free agent that the Arizona Cardinals should pursue is, go figure, a corner. Cornerback William Jackson III from the Cincinnati Bengals, who's always graded out very well. What were you telling me? The Pro Football Focus had him as the sixth best available cornerback, right, in free agency? Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what you have to do. You have to look at both areas to address this need. You have to look at free agency. Now, he's William Jackson's 28 years old. So he's a veteran. He's been in this league for a few years. The problem with him is just I think the cost is going to be very high. I think his cost is going to be $12 million a year, somewhere in that $13 million a year. So that could eat up a lot of your available cap space.
Yeah. Also, one other note from this Athletic two-round mock. I mean, real quick, first of all, the player in the second round they had him taking was a linebacker, North Carolina's Chaz Surratt, who was actually a former quarterback, and they converted him to linebacker there when there was a coaching change. And number two was just the quarterbacks in this draft. He had three in the first four picks, four in the first eight picks, which I think is a little more in line with how this thing is going to go down in April when it comes to the quarterbacks and when they're taken in the draft.
Yeah, the quarterbacks are going to go. I mean, they just are. Now, the Fields guy scares the hell out of me. I love the BYU kid. And I like, you know, the Clemson kid, of course. But the Fields, man, I've seen him play really well. I've seen him play not so well. And so he kind of scares me. If my team drafted him, I'm not so sure what I'm getting with Fields. But he's going to get drafted in the first round because teams are quarterback needy and teams need quarterbacks. Devontae Smith, the way he played, man, maybe he goes super high. Maybe he even goes as high as number two to the Jets. I'm not sure. But the Cardinals, 16 is like where they're picking. That's a tough spot to figure out what you're going to get. That's a really tough spot to figure out what you're going to get because, you know, at that point, I mean, it's going to be really hard to determine what guys are going to be there at that point and what guys aren't going to be there. And, you know, you're just hoping, you know, they've got a lot of needs. They need a wide receiver. They need a running back. They need a defensive lineman, pass rusher specifically. They need a cornerback. So they'll get one of those guys there. I don't think they'd be aggressive and move up because they got a lot of needs, so I think they would want to hold on to their draft picks.
When we come back, the Arizona Cardinals, once upon a time, less than a year ago, were able to use him to absolutely fleece the Texans in the DeAndre Hopkins trade. If the circumstances were right, would the Cardinals want David Johnson back? Would David Johnson even want to come back? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. It was Pro Football Focus who I think kind of started the conversation today about David Johnson. And I mean, we ended up having such a conversation about it, Sarah turned it into a poll question about the former Cardinals running back and when he becomes available this offseason, because they're going to cut him, would you want him back? And what did we do? It was like three quarters of our audience. It was running like 73%, Gambo, I think, said no. They didn't want David Johnson back, and there were a whole bunch of reasons why. The lack of physicality. I was kind of running soft towards the end of his time here. But make no mistake, it's coming. I mean, Pro Football Focus has pointed out he's a $12 million cap hit. There's no way the Texans, who have no money to spend, are going to allow him to be on the roster. If they cut him before June 1st, they're going to save themselves about $10 million, and that would leave a cap hit of about $2 million. He is going to get cut, in all likelihood, by the Houston Texans, and then it brings up a real interesting question. Would you want him back? Would he want to be back if he were available?
He averaged 4.7 yards per carry. That was his best ever. And he still got 46 catches out of the backfield. He's 29 years old. And listen, you know, one of the reasons you didn't like David Johnson because how much they were paying him. You know, you didn't like him because they paid him all that money. And he wasn't producing at that level. But for $2 million bucks or, you know, a minimum deal with incentives, I mean, I got to think about it because if Drake doesn't come back, I'd like to have a veteran running back. I mean, I'd like to have a veteran guy. Doesn't, you know, just to compete with Chase and be there in case Chase, you know, gets hurt because Chase gets banged up sometimes. I also need to draft one. I mean, I'm definitely looking to see if I can get one of those stud running backs in the second or third round because, you know, that's where a lot of good running backs are found these days in the second and third round.
Yeah, there's certainly a need to add a young one on the roster somewhere. Dave Johnson, I wouldn't be a fan of it. I just think he brings, and first of all, the question we should be asking ourselves, and I know we don't know the answer to this, but the question that really matters the most is, would he want to come back? You know, would he, if he gets cut and has options, would he, if the Cardinals were his only option, okay, he probably would. But if he has multiple options, I just don't know if he would want to come back to the team.
Yeah, he might not.
I mean, think about it. Think about how celebrated his departure was from this fan base.
Yeah, but
right?
They got DeAndre Hopkins for him.
of course. But oh my God, that's Steve Keim. Build a statue to that guy right now because of what he was. Yeah, he traded that player and that contract and got DeAndre Hopkins. I don't think David Johnson would want to be back. I think that's question number one. But let's say he did. Question number two would be, would the Cardinals want him back? I wouldn't. I think there's too much baggage. I think there's too many. It's the wound is still, like with Carlos Dansby, that wound, if there even was one, had a good chance to heal by the time they brought him back the second time. Whereas with David Johnson, I think that wound is still fresh enough that I don't know if I'd want a player back like that who would bring that kind of emotional baggage with him in his return. He's a good back, and I think somebody will certainly give him $2 million next year to go average 4.7 yards per carry and have 400 or 500 yards receiving. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I just don't know if I want the Cardinals to do it. I just think there are too many strings attached on that one.
Yeah, no, listen, that's fair. That's fair. I'm just, you look at free agent running backs, you say, who's going to be out? Oh, well, David Johnson's going to be out there. You know what? He's not half bad when you pay him $2 million. He's half bad when you pay him, $15 million.
Sure.
You want to pay him all that money. Like, okay, that doesn't work.
That is the distinction with David Johnson. He's a fine player, just not at that price tag, not at that dollar figure, and he's getting to that age. He'll his 2021 season, he'll be 29 years old, which is, it's not exactly the magic number for running backs,
but one year,
to the magic number.
You look for guys right now who can help me for a year. You're not looking for somebody to get up you for 4 years. You'll draft that guy. You're looking at who could be here for, when you're signing a 29-year-old running back, you're like, okay, let me get a year out of the guy. Can you get a good year out of David Johnson? Catches the ball out of the backfield as good as anybody. Average 4.7 yards per carry. But I understand what you're saying. I mean, it might not be, based on, now you played a cut earlier from Steve Keim. They didn't burn any bridges, right? The Cardinals didn't burn any bridges with him. So it's just a matter of, he might not have the pride to do that to come. He might not be able to do that pride-wise. That might not work for him.
This is Steve Keim on September 11th. This was the day after the opener of the 2020 season between the Houston Texans and the Kansas City Chiefs. If you recall, David Johnson had a touchdown run in that game. Here's Steve Keim, the Cards general manager, the next day with Doug and Wolf on how he and the organization still roots for David Johnson.
I love David Johnson. I mean, he is a wonderful, wonderful person. I know he has that talent and ability in him. And I thought early on, especially that touchdown run, it was vintage David Johnson with the lateral jump cut. He showed a little patience and then the burst and the acceleration. So I'm happy for him. I hope he has success. Anytime that you draft a young man and you develop a relationship, there's an emotional attachment to him, and I'll continue to follow him throughout his career.
I also think, Gambo, there is going to be a plethora of running backs available this offseason that are like David Johnson, that have a similar skill set to David Johnson that will give you similar numbers. And given the choice, no offense to David Johnson, I would rather have somebody who comes in here clean versus somebody who comes in here with some baggage from their first go around with the organization. I think it'd be a simpler preference to go about it that way.
It was just something, man. And I understand what you're saying because, Matt Breed is going to be available. Carlos Hyde, Leonard Fournette. There's going to be quite a few guys that are available that you can sign and get them on the cheap, right? There are. The question is, you got to get anybody that's better than him. I mean, you're still looking for talent. I don't know, you're right. The first thing is, man, he may not want to come back here. It didn't end very well, right? I mean, his wife was tweeting stuff out, and she may not want to come back, that's definitely a possibility that's not an option for him. But if I'm the Cardinals, I'm gonna make a list of my top free agent running backs. I'm gonna say, okay, I like Leonard Fournette. He's an unrestricted free agent. I mean, I like him. He made $2.5 million this year.
Yeah. So I tell you, I think it was a good question worth asking. I really do, because it got quite a reaction during our show prep meeting. I know that. You kind of floated the idea, and I could just tell it was going to be something worth talking about on the air, because we all, the whole Burns and Gambo team off the air, we just started debating it, right? We just started talking about the pros and the cons and the goods and the bads and the reason why you would and the reason why you wouldn't. I think it's a question worthy of asking, and we'll see. We'll see if it even. I'm sure he's going to get cut.
He's getting
was
cut.
Worth discussion. Yeah, he's getting cut. Yeah,
he's getting cut.
He's
going to get cut. Now it's just a matter of where he ends up. I thought it was interesting because you look at all these and the Cardinals. We've talked about it, right. The Cardinals have brought back players. Brought back Marcus Golden, no problem. They bring back guys. They brought back Carlos Dansby's got brought back like eight times. They'll bring back guys. They don't burn the bridges. I mean, they don't burn the bridges because you just never know. You never know when that guy may have an opportunity to come back.
The Wizards will not have enough players to play tomorrow night due to COVID. considering the Suns were just in Washington last night playing against the Wizards. What does that mean for the Suns? We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Dwayne Rankin is the beat writer for AZ Central. He covers the Phoenix Suns. He just tweeted out, Gambo, 2 minutes ago. Atlanta Hawks coach Lloyd Pierce said, as of right now, Atlanta Phoenix is on as they're preparing to play the Suns tomorrow night at Phoenix Suns Arena. Which, by the way, just quick note on the side, it's still really weird calling it Phoenix Suns Arena. That's strange. It's just
pony up the money, man. We'll call it the Dave Burns Arena. Let's go.
Not for nothing, as my friend Gambo would say.
Not for
but
nothing.
To have an arena that doesn't have a corporate sponsor, that's weird. It's weird to describe a building as Phoenix Suns Arena and not fill-in-the-blank arena. It's very strange. Very strange.
I kind of like it. I could get used to it.
Oh, I could too, but don't get too comfortable with it. It will get purchased by somebody at some point, but for now it's Phoenix Suns Arena. The reason why that game tomorrow might at least be a question mark for some and why Lloyd Pierce is getting asked about it is because the Washington Wizards, the team the Suns played last night, just basically announced that their game tomorrow against the Jazz has been postponed. And the reason why it has been postponed is because they just do not have the 8 players necessary to be able to compete. Now, we saw what happened earlier today. The injury report came out for the Wizards. Rui Hachimura and Mo Wagner both were put on the list, unable to participate list because of COVID. We think it's contact tracing because they were both listed as questionable for a game that now is not going to happen, which then makes you wonder how many players they came in contact with enough to drop them down the threshold so that they wouldn't be able to play tomorrow. How this impacts the Suns, I have no idea. We will find out.
Well, the thing that's fascinating to me is that they played with 12 players last night against the Suns. 2 are in protocol, as we know about, so that still leaves 10. And they're saying they don't have the 8 to play. So that means they don't have 8 to play. So that means there's still 3 more players that somehow are either injured or in protocol. 12 played last night against Phoenix. 2 of those players are now in protocol and ineligible to play tomorrow. That would leave them with 10. But they're saying, no, they don't have 10. No, they don't have 9. And no, they don't even have 8. So that means that 3 other players from last night's game that played in the game are not able to play in this game. And it could be somebody got injured, or it could be the contact tracing as well.
Yeah, I would assume that, and I don't know this for a fact, but I would assume that it's players who came in contact with Rui Hachimura and Mo Wagner, and because those players are out with health and safety protocols, or at least questionable due to health and safety protocols, that any player that came within extended contact with them, I guess the question now becomes, did the Suns, by virtue of playing a basketball game against the Washington Wizards, and this is something that I read a really long, in-depth story today, and there was a lot of science in it. That's a bad thing, but it was just too much to kind of present on the air. But basically, the long and the short of it was, look, the NFL is different because it's outside, because you're playing essentially an outdoor sport. I know some NFL teams obviously play inside a dome or like the Cardinals do, but the NBA being such close contact and being such limited rosters, and given the fact that every single game is indoors all the time, are you more at risk to spread it from player to player during a basketball game than you are player to player during a football game or a baseball game, because those are primarily taking place outdoors? Because if that's the case, if they deem that the Suns, through contact tracing, had too much contact with the Wizards players from last night, then you can see why the Suns might suddenly be in jeopardy of having to sit a few of their own guys because of that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think so. Does it sound like you're indoors and close contact sounds like it. But you just don't know. So I've got some text in trying to find out, you know, if the game's, you know, with the Suns, and I haven't heard anything yet, but we haven't heard that. You know, if the Suns game was called off, the league would announce something that the Suns aren't going to play tomorrow, but they haven't done that yet. Remember, the Suns got in last night about 3:30, somewhere between 3:30 and 4 in the morning. They were all tested when they got in. So they all got tested when they got in, and I haven't heard anything about any negative tests or stuff like that, but that wouldn't take into consideration what you've talked about with the contact tracing. How many players on Washington are deemed close contact to those players, and were any Suns players deemed close contact?
Yeah, we had Brian Windhorst on our show earlier, and we asked him the question, after playing Washington, should the Suns be concerned? And sorry, I wish we had something more firm to give you, but even he said, I don't know, guys.
Guys, I have no idea. I don't. I mean, this is, it's all case by case. You know, Bradley Beal was set. He had to sit for a game because he spent some time talking to Jason Tatum, you know, two guys from St. Louis who've known each other since they were very young, talked after the game, and Bradley Beal lost the game because of that. And, you know, in talking to people in the league, it's all the case by case basis. There's case by case basis. There's not a blanket policy that's being applied. They had to just evaluate one by one. You know, there have been other, you know, situations where teams have played each other with a few positives, and there's been no spread. So, you know, this virus is so strange.
Now, the NBA did come out with a new set of protocols today that had been previously negotiated and agreed to by the players' union, and there, it's an attempt to try to stave this off. Further rules when they're on the road about just staying in the hotel. There are no guests allowed inside your hotel room, which will be interesting for the NBA. There are when you're at home, you're basically supposed to stay at home all the time. Only go out if it's something essential. Again, this is nothing that should surprise the players with these new rules, but it will be interesting to see if over the next 2 weeks this extra level of precaution can kind of turn the tide on this, because things are going in the wrong direction for the NBA. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I think if she's right. I mean, every day that they get by playing those games, they're probably, whew, all right, got our games
right,
in.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think now they're dealing with the, okay, didn't have this game and that game, and now, you know, so it's going to be Monday, no game. A game was missed Monday. A game was missed Tuesday. A game is going to be missed Wednesday. And now the panic is starting to set in. Okay, well, what if we have to postpone two games or three games or four games? Or what if this spreads? So now it's like, okay, what's that, the hatchet phrase? You got to tighten up the hatchet or button up the hatchet or some phrase.
Bury
like
the
that.
Hatchet? You have to bury the hatchet? Hatchet? Which,
all right, I don't know.
Really
they got to tighten everything up to make sure that these players understand that this, like, they're in the danger zone right now.
Yeah, big time. Time for What's On Tonight, brought to you by Coors Light. NBA basketball tonight, including the Lakers and the Rockets. That's What's On Tonight. We're out of here. We will see you tomorrow at 2 here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Have a good night, everyone.